Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of It's Okay to Feel. My name is Ed Portillo. I'm the program manager here at NAMI Orange County in Orange County, California. And we are excited that you're joining us. This is a special one about resiliency. And Shelly Armenta is actually from our community. She's an Inner Own Voice teacher, and she works for the Warm Line and really is an inspiration. Her story is when I would have her for Inner Own Voice to share her story, very hard to hear, but also very hopeful and very inspirational. And so when we first did her presentation on resiliency, we had about, I think it was like 75 or 65 people show up on Zoom. And it was kind of a phenomenon. It was like, wow, we didn't realize how many people would want to see something on resiliency. And it's such an important topic. You know, it's such an important topic. And knowing her story, and I realized, you know, she's probably the best person to talk about resiliency and how to acquire that. And so we get kind of deep into her process and how she what she came up with as far as the ways of developing resiliency for your life. So I think you're going to enjoy it. And if you enjoy all our episodes, feel free to give us some feedback at itsokaytofeel@namioc.org. itsokaytofeel@namioc.org. And check out NAMI OC, all of our programs. We have programs for families, individuals, and parents that are affected by mental illness. We also have mentoring programs. We have a warm line. We have a line that you call 24/7. And all that information is at our website at namioc.org. So check it out and hope you enjoy this episode. So Shelly Armenta is here. Hi, Shelly.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And Shelly, your presentation, your talk that we did last time on It's Okay to Feel is the second most listened to episode.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yes. Yeah, cool. So it's, I'm glad we talked at your forum on journaling that you did. And you mentioned that you wanted to come back. And I was like, yes, absolutely. Can't wait to talk to you again. So I'm glad you're back. And we're here to talk about resiliency.
Yes. One of my favorite topics, something I could go on and on about for days.
Well, let's jump right into it. So tell us a little bit about, you know, well, first I want to know, how did you get on the interest of this topic? You know, how did you do your research? Like, how did you kind of come to the six things that we're going to talk about today?
Yeah. So in my healing journey, and just kind of a quick overview on my background, I have a couple different diagnoses that I deal with in my daily life. One is complex PTSD, and one is ADHD. And those combined can be really cumbersome on your daily life. And they can have effects like depression, anxiety, overwhelm, and that kind of plays into the PTSD symptoms, and it can really be a hindrance. So for a long time, I was in a dark spot trying to make sense of these conditions that I was diagnosed with, trying to make sense of what my life could look like with those, because I was never willing to just take news from a doctor and let it hit me in a negative way and kind of sit with that and say, well, I guess I'm limited now. That was just never my mindset. I always looked at it as, okay, I have these conditions, and I can work with them. I just can't do certain things, and I'll figure out what those things are that I cannot do, that I have to avoid to, you know, keep my peace, keep my foundation, you know, calm and centered, if you will. So in my journey of really diving into what my healing journey was going to look like, I had to do a lot of research. I did a lot of talking with my therapist. I did a lot of talking in group therapy. And what really came up pretty quickly for me was that I was dealing with a lot of negative thinking about myself. I had a lot of conditioning from both my family and from the media and from some doctors even, that because I had certain conditions, I was going to be impacted in a negative way. And I had a lot of shame and a lot of guilt almost with that, because I did see how the negative effects of my depression, my anxiety, the PTSD was affecting me as a mother, as a wife, as a worker. And for a long time, I let those feelings bring me down and really keep me in a dark spot. And through group therapy, through individual therapy, I started to realize that I actually was still standing through all of that. And there was something there to be said for a girl still standing after all of those blows. So instead of being in the mindset where I took account of all of my failures and all of my lack, I started to flip the script and I started to take account of all of my successes, even if they were small, even if they felt minuscule. And truly, in the beginning, it was very hard for me, because my reframing started by just making daily lists of things that I was accomplishing. And at first, those things were all I could put on paper was I got up, I woke up that morning, I brushed my teeth, I took a shower, I put my makeup on, I made breakfast. And I want to be very transparent that not every day had everything like that on that list. Some days I could barely feel comfortable putting that I got out of bed on the list, because I might have gotten out of bed to shuffle to the restroom, but I didn't do anything that I considered to be impactful or productive. So I was still in a cycle of being really mean to myself and not giving myself credit. So slowly but surely, with the encouragement of, again, my therapist and my loved ones around me, I kept at this habit of taking account of the successes and the small wins. And slowly but surely, it became a mindset shift for me, to where instead of looking at my list of small wins and thinking, I wish I could have done more, it should be bigger things, I started looking at the list and thinking, okay, we killed it today. We got out of bed. We didn't, when I first opened my eyes, the thoughts that hit me were, I don't want to get in the shower. I don't want to make breakfast. I don't want to go to work today. I want to stay here and just rot in bed with my thoughts and just stay. And I would choose to fight against that. And even if it was something that somebody would say is small, like making breakfast and getting out of bed, I chose to do those things. I chose to get out of bed despite how heavy I was feeling, despite how loud the negative thoughts were. And it wasn't easy, and it still isn't easy all the time, but slowly but surely, I kind of retrained my brain to give myself kudos instead. And it became easier for me to see all the positive wins that I was making throughout my day. To the point now that I've been doing it for about 6, 7 years now, and I can confidently say that I actually have self-esteem for the first time. My self-talk, it's not always exactly what I want it to be, but I've noticed that it's way more positive. I'm giving myself compliments, internally, instead of saying like, oh, you could have done that better, or you could have responded to that quicker, or whatever the old patterns would say. It's easier for me to cut that off and say, you know what, but I still did it. But I still did it, and I believed in myself the whole time. And yeah, maybe it didn't end exactly how I wanted it to, but I showed up for myself. I showed up for myself, and I stayed for myself, and I proved something. And even if it's nothing monumental that makes waves for anyone else to notice, those little moments of showing up for myself have really brought me to a point of realizing that I'm not a victim of my circumstances. I'm not somebody who is just burdened with all of these afflictions and has to just trudge through life and do and just find the best that I can with all of this. I am somebody, yes, who has a difficult past and who has some things that make moving forward in a smooth way, a little tricky, but it also has opened up so many life lessons for me, and it's also opened up so many opportunities for growth. And that's where the resilience came in for me. That's where I started to be able to step back and realize, okay, over these past few years, the wins for my day have grown and I have grown. And to me, that was really the start of just realizing that not only is there hard things in a mental health recovery journey, there's strength and there's wins. And that is what resilience is to me. It was a very long-winded answer and I apologize, but definitely it's something that I think in self-reflection, all of us can really pick through and realize that, okay, we do have some resilience in our story and in our journey. And even if it's small right now, it will grow, because that's one thing about resilience is it grows with us. It's a snowball effect. And as we grow, it grows. And that's just something that's been really encouraging to me on my journey.
Yeah, it's clear. It's clear that you're really an expert on this topic. And also, this is kind of a preview of the presentation that you're going to do in person and hybrid on the 19th at the Hoag Center for Healthy Living. So the 19th of April in 2024, you'll be doing a presentation for us about resiliency. But we're going to kind of preview it a little bit, talk about it a little bit more in a more like conversational setting. But why don't we just start off with how do you define emotional resiliency?
So for me, emotional resiliency, I like to start with these days, what I like to start with is what it doesn't mean to me, because a lot of times I think resilience can come off as almost like a band-aid effect. So to me, being resilient doesn't mean being unaffected by things. And I think a lot of times when we say like, oh, you're such a resilient person, we're saying that to somebody who seems like in the moment they're not being dragged down by their circumstances. And I just want to point out that being resilient doesn't mean that you're not affected by those things. It means that you're choosing to move through it while being affected. It also, to me, isn't about being immune to life's difficulties, but about being able to sit with life's difficulties and, again, make the choice. Am I going to stay here? Am I going to go backwards? Or am I going to take this new information, these new coping skills, these new things that I've learned about myself and maybe the situation that I'm in, and am I going to move forward, even if it's a tiny baby step? So for me, that's one of the kind of foundational aspects of emotional resiliency. I think it definitely combines a lot of different things in there too. There's a lot of aspects of self-esteem that go into emotional resiliency, self-awareness of your circumstances, where you've been, how far you've come. Self-compassion is a big key component in it. And then I hate to say it, but optimism. And I only hate to say it because I don't want to come off with that toxic positivity and making it seem like, oh, let's just be optimistic and everything's going to be okay. But I think even in the darkest times, even in our hardest times, if we can just keep the door cracked open to optimism, we don't have to let it completely come through if we need to sit with the hard moments for a little bit, because there is a time and place for that. And that's another key of emotional resiliency, is being able to sit with those hard lessons, those hard moments, and really wade through them and think about how it's affecting you, why it's affecting you the way it is, and learning from it, so that when you move through it, as you move through it and you encounter something similar, you're more equipped to realize how you best are going to get through that situation for yourself. And again, there's a lot of components to it, but at the key, there's a lot of self-awareness that needs to be there and a lot of self-compassion, because while we're learning these hard things about ourselves, while we're giving ourselves grace, we can't really extend that grace to ourselves without that compassion aspect. So again, another long-winded answer, but there's just so much that goes into it, I think. And it's just a really exciting topic to dive into, honestly.
Absolutely, yeah. And to tell, I want to talk about self-awareness next, but when you talk about optimism, and leaving the door open for optimism is because I know that also optimism, like it does get a negative, like toxic positivity, like you're saying, does get kind of a negative rap sometimes. But if you consider yourself a realist, or you consider yourself a pessimist, or you consider yourself, you don't consider yourself optimistic, do you still think it's valuable, even if you think you're pessimistic, that you can have a little bit of optimism in your life? Is it something you need to work on? Maybe if you don't feel like you are optimistic, you can kind of work on that, develop that.
Absolutely. I truly believe that with every fiber of my being, because I used to consider myself a really negative, dark person. And that was for a couple different reasons. One, as I was growing up, I had a lot of negative influences in my family who would see the symptoms of my depression and see the symptoms of my PTSD and say, that's not really working for us. You're kind of bringing us down and you're a little bit of a negative Nancy. Nothing makes you happy. So I kind of grew up with this perception about myself that I had that internal voice really strong, to the point where I would even journal about it and like say it and write that as a statement, like, nothing makes me happy. Why does nothing make me happy? Like, why can't I see the light in this? Like, why can't I just be grateful for this? And it gets me emotional thinking about it because, again, I was stuck in that for so long. And it impacted so many layers of my life. But now, sitting here as a 34-year-old woman, I get told regularly that my optimism annoys people around me, which is crazy to me because again, it's night and day. I would have never seen that for myself in my life. But I think I've always had that in me, but due to other influences, it was drowned out. And I didn't know that it was something there until I went searching in my healing journey. And yeah, it gets me, it's a great, it's, I'm glad we brought this up because it gets me really emotional to reflect on it because it brings so much hope to me, to think about where I used to be and how dark and scary that place was and how miserable I was. Because truly nothing, like you could say that it was sunny outside to me, and I'd be like, well, it's forecast is gonna rain. And like that was just my mindset. Like I couldn't get out of that for the longest time. And yeah, it's just I through and I will say it took time. It took time on my journey. I've been in this healing journey for many years, but actively working on it for again about 6, 7 years with the help of like psychiatrists, therapists, group therapy, doing my own research, and even taking classes on mental health and self-care. That's where I've kind of cultivated being able to lean into my optimism. Again, I don't think it's something that I discover. I don't know how to word it. I think it's always been there. I just didn't know how to engage with it. And I, in my healing, it kind of organically presented itself to me as an option. Like I had the choice presented to me. Do I want to believe that I could be better and that I could get better and that my life could look the way I wanted it to look, my whole entire upbringing? Or did I want to keep thinking the way I was trained to think and taught to think? Because I knew where that level of thinking got me. I knew where that lack of optimism led me to in my life. So it was a lot of choice, but also bravery too, because it's scary to choose something that you haven't chosen before. And a new way of thinking might seem like not that big of a deal, but it is. It's really big deal if you really committed to thinking a certain way for years and years and years, letting go of that and having even a minuscule amount of faith to step into something else is really scary, but it's, in my opinion, been so worth it because I've definitely seen how I can cultivate that optimism, and I think that can grow. So if, and honestly, if that's true for me and somebody with a background like mine, I would put my money on it that that's true for all of us.
Yeah. And it's almost like it's a muscle, you know, it's like something that you can work out. It's like something that you have to condition yourself to do. And one of the things that you talk about is self-awareness. Talk about how important that is in developing resiliency.
Oh God, it's so important. It's maybe one of the most important things that I've discovered, because we can't, it's almost like if you have a problem with your car, right? There's a check engine light on. You're not going to be able to fix the problem if you don't get it diagnosed, right? If you don't like dive into it a little bit more and discover what's going on exactly. It's one thing to be aware that there's a problem and something off and it's a little wonky, but if you don't have the details of it, if you don't arm yourself and equip yourself with as much information as possible, you're doing a disservice to yourself because you don't have all the information. So for me, self-awareness is, it's been very important, but it's also, I get how hard it is. It's very hard to be self-aware because, again, you're taking inventory and account of things that might not be things that you want to share with others, might not be things you want to post on social media. But by sitting with those things and working through your emotions on them and, you know, the impact it has on you in your life, there's a lot of value and work there that is so impactful to our journey, not just on a healing journey, but on a growth journey. So I really think self-awareness, as scary as it can be, is a tool that serves us in so many ways. It's definitely served me along the way, but I get annoyed with myself for being self-aware sometimes, because in the middle of a spiral, I can kind of, it's almost like a flag that gets waved in my brain where I'm like, okay, I don't need to be reacting this heavily. Like, I'm being a little dramatic right now. Let me dial it back. Let me excuse myself. Let me go reflect a little bit. And whether that looks like taking a minute to journal, whether that means calling somebody to kind of like vent and verbally figure out what I'm thinking and feeling and going through. It's helpful because the self-awareness flags that get raised in us can help us stop, pause, and make a better decision instead of just kind of like, well, this is how I am as a person. I'm just reactive. I'm just emotional. I'm just sensitive. And yeah, those things can be true, but because I am those things, I'm all of those things, but I don't let them become my personality anymore, because I should be running the show, not these little habits, these old habits of mine, not these little, you know, they're like anti-coping skills is what I like to call them, because the coping skills I engage with now, it would be like taking a breath, doing a breathing exercise, you know, talking to somebody, journaling. My anti-coping skills back in the day would be just panic and take it out on everyone else and like make sure everyone is aware of how freaked out I am right now. Like, everyone needs to be on the same page with me right now. And again, that didn't serve me. That never served me. So if I never got to the point of sitting with the self-awareness that, hey, this is not something that's helpful to me, to my loved ones, to my coworkers, to anyone walking on the street next to me, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to choose to do something that's a little bit better. So again, self-awareness, huge, huge component of resilience for sure.
Yeah. So it's something that, again, that like we might not be, you know, aware of self-awareness at first, but it's something, you know, that is, once you take a step back and you realize that that's, you know, your actions are profound, you know, your thoughts are profound. And if you kind of think about how, you know, you step back and look at them, how what you are thinking and what you are, you know, who you are, being around, who you are, it affects everything. Just self-awareness really, if you have a, if you're grounded, it really helps, you know, affect everything that you're, that's a, that's around you. So the next topic is a little more, I think it really does need a good explanation, because it's something that people don't hear about a lot. They don't understand maybe that when they hear it at first, but cognitive reconstructing. Cognitive reconstructing, I know, is another point that you talk about.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So cognitive restructuring, that's basically just like a fancy term for reframing. Reframing is an easier way to put that too. It sounds like a big process, and it definitely can feel cumbersome when you start to engage with this. But basically what cognitive restructuring or reframing is, it's assessing and taking inventory of your thoughts, your current thought cycles. You know, what do you usually tell yourself on a day-to-day basis? What do you tell yourself when you're in a certain situation or circumstance? And then evaluating those thoughts. Do they serve me? Are they helpful? Are they harmful? Also, why might I be thinking this? Taking a step back to not only notice what you're thinking, but diving in a little bit more and and assessing what patterns or what in my past has led to this thought can be a really big discovery too. Again, sometimes a hard thing to sit with and think about, but a great journaling opportunity, a great talking point in therapy if you have a therapy session. But yeah, why might I be thinking this? Why might this be my thinking pattern? Why, you know, it's built somehow in some way over some period of time. So getting to the root of it can definitely be helpful, especially at unpacking it and restructuring it moving forward. And then the next part of the cognitive restructuring or reframing would be after we have all of this information about our current thought patterns and why we have these current thought patterns and are they serving or are they harmful? Then it's okay, do we need to change our thought patterns? And a lot of the times we could all benefit from changing our thought patterns a little bit, especially if we're dealing with, you know, cycles of negativity or beating ourselves up. So then having that time to really, okay, what do I want to be saying to myself? What would I say to a really good friend? What would I say to a loved one in this situation? What should my thought patterns be? And not to like bully ourselves and say like, oh, I should have been thinking this all along. I hate that. But just giving ourselves an opportunity to try something different. And if it works and it's great and it helps us, just being grateful that you got yourself to that point. Because what I've noticed, at least in my journey and for myself, is once I got to a certain part of my healing and I realized, like, wow, I could have been doing this a long time ago, there was a little bit of a period where I, again, had some shame and some guilt and some regret because I was like, oh, I could have been doing this a long time ago. And this is just a quick side note, but I like to encourage people that if those feelings come to you on any part of your healing journey, the regret, the, oh, I wish I would have had this earlier, I just encourage you to give yourself grace and just be so grateful and proud of yourself for getting to that point right now and realizing that the timing is so divine in our lives, and when we come to things is when we need to come to things, and just giving yourself that grace and moving forward with those new thought patterns. And it's not always going to be easy. It's not going to be like we, you know, have a great journaling session and we map out what our thought patterns should be and what we want them to be, and then moving forward next day, that's just how it is. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of reminding ourselves and constantly going back to the positive thought and replacing the negative thoughts. So I do want to be again transparent that it is a lot of self work, but it's so worth it. I've never engaged with I've never done harder work that has benefited me more in my life. So I, as much as it can be tricky or scary to kind of dive into it or overwhelming at first, there's just so much value in it. And I encourage anyone to that's interested in cognitive restructuring and reframing to kind of dive into that a little bit more and maybe try a journaling exercise on reframing just one negative thought. If there's one negative thought that really haunts you throughout your day, maybe try writing that down on a blank piece of paper and then evaluating it. What is this thought serving? Is it serving me? No. Okay. Is it harming me? Okay. In what ways? All right. And then maybe why am I thinking this thought? What happened in the past that led this to be such a easy thing for me to think about myself? And what is a good replacement? So again, just taking it kind of one thought at a time and being really graceful for with yourself, giving yourself a lot of credit for the work you're doing.
Yeah. And so if I'm tracking what we do, we first kind of pause. We kind of think about our surroundings, think about our thoughts, hold our thoughts captive, kind of take that step back. And then the next step is figuring out those thoughts now and diving deep into those thoughts and unpacking them. And seeing how valuable they are. Are they something that we need to think about? Are they something that brings us down? Why do they bring us down? Kind of like, it's like an onion, kind of like cutting the onion layer by layer. Is that kind of where we're am I tracking?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
Yeah.
just for example, like a very common thought would be something like I'm just like a negative overarching thought, like I'm worthless or I'm useless. And if that's a thought that you're struggling with, that would definitely be a great one to sit with and unpack because it's once you discover the root of a thought like that, you can really go down a different path because most of the time those thoughts are planted in us, very early on in our journey by somebody maybe that wasn't even intentionally trying to hurt us, but just spoke out of their hurt and it landed. Because there are very formative years in our lives that we can experience things that even just maybe last 5 to 30 seconds, but stick with us for decades. So being able to have the time to really evaluate where did this thought come from and who credited this? Who said that this was true? And unpacking that all the way down to, well, are they an expert on me? And like, was that a real it's just so powerful to really kind of like knock yourself down a little bit, which sounds funny, but when you're bullying yourself, when anyone's bullying someone, you kind of have to humble the bully, right? So if you're bullying yourself, you got to put yourself back in place and be like, well, is that true of me? Like, who said that about me? And if that person said that, does that make it inherently true, or does that just make them a hurt person trying to hurt somebody else? And most of the time, that's the case. So then once we've learned that, it becomes a little bit easier to detach from the thought. And moving forward, again, the work of just replacing the thought, as soon as you realize you're thinking, oh, I'm worthless, I messed it up again because I'm worthless, then you can take a step back and be like, but I'm not though, because that was not true of me. That thought, that thing said about me was never true about me. So I have a choice to think a new thing. And that new thing can be, I'm not worthless. I'm growing. I'm learning. I'm getting better. I might still make mistakes and fail and fall, but that's okay because mistakes make us. Mistakes are what help us grow. And if we're not making mistakes, if we're not falling a little bit, where's the growth opportunity? So again, just having, yeah, just being able to unpack it and then realize, okay, this was said by somebody with no authority over who I am, and I don't have to believe this about myself anymore. Really, really powerful thing to do for yourself.
Would you say that this cognitive reconstruction or cognitive restructuring is a good exercise for even individuals who haven't gone to therapy to kind of prepare themselves for therapy. Because this is,
Absolutely.
yeah.
I definitely think so. And there are actually, I hate to just like constantly talk about journaling, but there are a lot of great guided journals nowadays that kind of take you through your thought process. And that's something, and not even just guided journals, but even journal prompts that you can search for online that kind of take you through evaluating your current thought process. So if you're not, if you're someone who is not currently in therapy, or considering starting therapy but not sure yet, I would definitely encourage still diving into this a little bit and seeing what this could look like for you in your life, because there's just so much value to being able to take control of our own internal dialogue, because at the end of the day, that's what we're hearing more than anything else. That's what we're coming back to. That's what is playing in our head before we go to bed, as soon as we wake up. So if we can get a jump on that, and if we can feel a little bit more in control of the thoughts that we're allowing, and the thoughts that we're allowing or choosing to believe and engage with, it can be very, very powerful. And not just the healing journey, but just growing as an individual and getting to where we want to be.
Yeah, when we talk about thoughts this a lot, and you know, your next point was about the power of the pause, and I know how important that is when you're talking about your thought patterns and what it is that you need to focus on. So talk a little about what the power of the pause means.
Yeah. So for the power of the pause, and again, this has been so important for me in my journey, and it's all about just taking a minute to give yourself time to make a different choice. Again, when we have spent many years engaging with a certain thought cycle, whether that's negative or positive, it's really hard to restructure that, especially the negative thoughts, because those I feel have extra strength that they carry sometimes, and they just feel so true when they're not. So having the ability to realize, okay, I'm beating myself up right now, or the soundtrack in my brain right now is an old soundtrack, I'm just going to take a minute, I'm going to take a beat. I like to do this before making a decision. Like if I'm in the middle of making a decision, and all of a sudden I notice that I am trying to choose this way or this way, and the thoughts in my brain are very loud of, well, think about the last time you made a choice like this and it went so wrong. Or if I start beating myself up, instead of just feeling overwhelmed by the thoughts and panicking and making a choice or just doing what I think is right, I will give myself the grace to step away and take some time to think it through. Again, I constantly journal. I always have a journal with me, because in addition to having people in my life that I trust to talk through things with me, nobody is a better expert on my life than me. So I need to be the one to kind of have an outlet for myself. So the pause has been very helpful in a lot of decision making, but also even just in social situations. I know a lot of times our negative thinking can make us feel like we're a burden to others, or like people don't want to be around us. So it can color our interactions with other people. So instead of just engaging with and flowing along with the old patterns of, oh, I'm so annoying, they don't like me, I need to leave, I'm going to excuse myself, taking a beat, taking a pause, and considering, is that true, or is that an old story I'm telling myself? And then also considering, what is the evidence of this thought? That's something that's really powerful to do while you're pausing and taking a beat for yourself, is what is the evidence? What is the truth? Because a lot of the times, our thoughts are not true. They're colored by feelings, they're colored by old experiences, they're colored by things that people have spoken into our lives that had no right to speak into our lives. So giving yourself a moment or a few moments, however much time you need, depending on the circumstance and what you're dealing with at the time, to really look at everything and see the value in it, see what's true and what's not true. That can be really impactful in how we make decisions and how we move forward and how we present ourselves to our loved ones and how we present ourselves and show up for ourselves in general. So being able to pause is a really great coping skill that I've found, not just for myself, but I've noticed in others that it's definitely been something that's been beneficial for them too.
Yeah, the pause is important to not only to have the awareness, and then you rethink where you dive into those thoughts, and then you have an actual pause to redirect or kind of put yourself in a different mindset. Am I right on that too?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Right on.
Great. And then we talked about the thing that puts your resilience on a really firm track, which is changing your thought patterns. And yeah, unwrap that for us.
So changing your thought patterns is definitely, again, it's you have in that power of the pause, you have an opportunity to, again, stay with the old thinking, the old patterns, or be brave and choose something new. So what I like to ask myself before I engage with, you know, changing my thought patterns is, what's my opportunity here? And I use my logic versus emotion when I'm evaluating this. Because again, our emotions will color our thoughts a lot, and it's more comfortable to fall into old patterns. It's more comfortable to beat ourselves up sometimes if that's what we've been doing for so long, or if what others have been doing on our behalf for so long. So being able to think, okay, well, what's my opportunity here? What am I currently sitting with, and what can I step into? And once I step into that, what could my life possibly look like? What could my days possibly look like? And it doesn't have to be anything completely grandiose, but even just the thought of being able to get through your day, being a little kinder to yourself, or ending your day feeling proud of yourself instead of, you know, recounting all of the ways you may have perceived that you failed that day. And I say you have perceived, because a lot of the times we didn't fail. We just like to be mean to ourselves. So being able to change the thought patterns, to look for opportunities to give ourselves kudos and opportunities to be proud of ourselves, that can be so healing for our, I want to say, like, our inner child. That, like, came to me really quickly, because I think in my journey, that's been very helpful to be able to be the person, you know, at 34 years old, to look back and be like, you know what, good job. You know what, you are doing a great job with what you were given, and you've dealt with a lot of hard things, and you have made some really hard choices, and you show up for yourself, even when you're scared, even when you don't want to, and look at all the good that's come from it. So that's been really healing. And I think for a lot of us, there can just be so many beautiful benefits of changing our thought patterns that we don't even realize until after, because then again, that's when the compassion comes in. That's when not just the compassion and grace for ourselves, but having self-esteem and having confidence and being able to be an advocate for yourself, instead of just being like, well, you know, I am who I am, and this is what people say about me, but being able to stand confidently in who you know yourself to be, all of the good, all of the bad, everything accumulated, everything in your journey, bringing you to where you are, standing in that and being able to confidently say, you know what, I'm proud of myself. I have so much more growth to engage in and get to, and I can't wait for it. I'm excited for it. It's going to be great. It might be scary sometimes, but it's going to be an adventure. That's a That's a great place to be in. And that comes when we have the opportunity to change our thought patterns and make a different choice for ourselves.
Yeah, that's so important, and it does take a lot of time. I can hear in your everything that you're saying that this has been years that you've been working on this, because I know that even for me that working on yourself is not the easiest. It is something that you and I like how you say your inner child. Because there's so much about our upbringing that determines who we are as adults. So in a lot of ways, you might have to talk to that inner child and say that you're okay, you're enough, you're doing the right thing. Give yourself grace, all those things that you're talking about. And I think that ties into the final thing that you talk about, which is cultivating gifts from grief, which is another important topic that I think, I want you to, dive into that for us.
I think a lot of the times that can sound almost silly at first, saying that there's gifts that we can cultivate from grief, because right off the bat, most people will agree that grief is something we want to avoid, right? That's not something we want to willingly afflict on ourselves, but it is a part of life. It is a part of everyone's journey. Grief isn't only tied to a death of a loved one. Grief can be, again, that regret of, wow, I didn't have this coping skill 20 years ago. Where would I have been in my life if I had this 20 years ago? That's grief. I have deep grief over what could have been for my life if things were different. And that's something that I have had to sit with and learn from, because I have a choice with that. It is true. It is unequivocally true that I deal with an enormous amount of grief because of the way my life was when I was a child. And I can't change that. But I have a choice. I can do what I did for many years and let it weigh me down and think, wow, it's so hard. Look at how hard it has been and how hard it will always be because of how hard it has been in the past. This just is what it is. That was my go-to saying for the longest time. It is what it is. This is how it is for me. I'm trying not to get too emotional because, again, it's been such a huge shift in my life that's brought me to where I am now. But being able to, instead of just accepting the grief and saying it is what it is and it brings me down. But I had the option and the opportunity to look at grief with different glasses and see, okay, what is this giving me? What is the opportunity here, right? What have I learned from this grief? And when I took account of that, when I do take account of that, I realize that because of everything I've gone through in my life, I have increased empathy. I have astounding self-compassion. I am extremely adaptable. I have a lot of coping skills. I've been able to assess and change patterns of thinking and behavior that weren't serving me. And again, I don't know that I would have gotten to that point if I had a different upbringing, if I had a perfect, beautiful life. Who knows if I would have been presented with the opportunity to be an empathetic person, to be a self-compassionate person, to be the person that I am today, which, I have a lot of growth to do. I'm not perfect, but at the end of the day, I know that I love the people in my life so hard and so well, and I show up for people and I care and I rally for the people I love and even people I don't know, just because that's who I am. And those things about me are some of my favorite things about me as a person. Some of the people that love me tell me that those are the favorite things about me, for them. And again, I have to acknowledge that I cultivated those things over time. I wasn't born with those skills. I wasn't born. I think we're all born with some compassion and kindness and love in us, but I didn't have to cultivate it as much as I did. So instead of looking at the grief of what could have been and saying, wow, it could have been so different, and I'm just a victim of circumstance, I look back and I see it and I say, this hurts me and it's heavy. And yes, I may be curious as to what it would have looked like if it was different, but thank God that I had the opportunities I had over the journey that I have had. Because again, I have been given the gifts of empathy. I've been given the gifts of discernment, of coping skills, of if I didn't go through what I went through, I would have never discovered journaling and writing and how much peace and joy and light that brings me. So I think that can be true for all of us. And I just want to say that I understand that grief is so heavy and so convoluted for all of us. And I don't ever want to make it seem like any of this is easy, because it's not. It's not easy at all. But dear God, it's so worth it. It's so valuable and it's so worth it. And we all have those spots of grief and loss in our life. Again, whether that's a loved one, whether that's a season of our lives, whether that's a choice that we made or didn't make, a job, a marriage, anything, we can evaluate the ways in which that grief is creating new patterns for us and bringing new opportunities for us. Because there is light in even the darkest situations, even if it's a sliver of it. And going back to the hope and the optimism, just keeping a door open. Like, it doesn't have, you don't have to kick it open. You don't have to open the whole window, but like just having a sliver open, just being, curious about the optimism, being curious about what are the gifts of this grief? What is this teaching me? Even if it's hard at first, just being curious can lead you down that path that eventually brings you to making different choices with your thinking. So, just kind of being curious to start out and learning, what is this teaching me? What can I pull from this instead of just being pulled down by it?
Do you think it's so important? It seems like it's really important that we it starts. It's a process, because right? I mean, it's really important that we say we start with the self, we being self-aware, and then getting to cultivating gifts of grief. Would you say that it has to start somewhere as a process before you, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you for saying that, because again, that's I love this topic so much, but I also have hesitation in speaking on it because I never want to come off as making it seem like, oh, it was so quick and easy, or it was just like I flew through the process. Because again, I still struggle. I still have days where I don't nail it, and I have to really, really extend myself some kindness and empathy and be like, okay, why was it such a tough day today? And be curious about it instead of being like, yeah, you did really, like, you dropped the ball today. Like, you could have done better here and here and here. I still have days like that. I still catch myself in moments of that, whether it's at home being a mom and, feeling mom guilt, or at work and getting overwhelmed and, feeling like I'm gonna snap. There are still so many growth opportunities every day for me. And some have become easier. I will say, I do notice that in the process, that it does slowly become easier for you. But there are still new thoughts that I'm discovering all the time, where it's like, I feel like I've nailed this aspect of my healing journey, but then all of a sudden, surprise, surprise, here's this new thing that I didn't unpack yet. And oh, wow, that's a heavy one too. So, okay, I'm starting the process all over with this thought instead of. So, it's definitely a journey, it's definitely layered. And I like to equate it to like a roller coaster, because you can be on the up and up and feeling like, wow, I'm doing so great. This is great. I'm so proud. And then the next day, life hits you, circumstances hit you, or the mood hits you differently, and you don't feel that pride in yourself, or you don't feel that you're disappointed, right? And that's so normal. But as long as we're constantly redirecting ourselves to self-compassion and kindness and curiosity, I think that's where the ball just keeps rolling, right? You don't have to be an expert at any of this right away. I'm not an expert at any of this still, but being curious about yourself and your own journey is going to keep that ball rolling for you in a monumental way, to where it just kind of unpacks the healing, and slowly but surely you feel more confident in it, and you feel that it is easier to kind of redirect the thoughts and reframe things. But yeah, it definitely takes time. But it is so worth it. It definitely is.
Yeah. Curiosity, a little bit of optimism, self-awareness. All those are things that I think are so important, as you're saying, that it starts, it could just be a little seed. And you might need to work on a couple of things first before you get to the next step, and work on that next step until you get to the next step. And then finally, where you get to a place where you're seeing the gifts that come, that cultivate from grief. So it's like, it's not even that it's because of the grief that you have the gifts. It has to be the things that you cultivate, you work on. And that's where you get you find the true treasure. And resiliency, really. I mean, that's where it comes from. So this has been amazing. This has been really profound. When I first heard it, you had, I think we had like 71 or 75 people show up on our Zoom when you perform, because this is such an important topic. People are out there, you know, when they hear the word resiliency or read the word resiliency, are wondering, how do I get there? How do I do that? I saw a TED talk that was like for kids, like, how do you know if your kid's going to have a successful life? It's because they have resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they went through something and they're able to hang in there. And so, you know, Shelly, we really appreciate you coming again and sharing this with us. I wonder if you can kind of tell us a little bit about, you know, maybe how people can get in touch or find out more about you and more about your different things that you're doing. And then, yeah, if we can kind of tell us a little about that.
Absolutely. So like we mentioned, we have the upcoming Resilience Forum on April 19th. I'm very excited about that. And I'm more excited that we have a dual opportunity to either be in person or online and join in on that one. So that's exciting. As far as getting in touch with me, I have my website that is currently getting updated with my upcoming speaking events, but it's shellyarmenta.com. You can email me at heygirl@shellyarmenta.com if you want to talk about any of this, or if you have any questions, need journal prompts. I'm your girl.
Yeah, absolutely. And she just did a presentation on journaling a couple months back, and which is amazing as well. She has a whole talk on how important journaling is. So she is definitely a well-rounded individual on this topic of mental health and this important topic on resiliency. So before we wrap up, before we say goodbye, is there any parting words you wanted to say to anybody before we wrap up?
Again, it's a process. It's such a process. It's not overnight. And just be kind to yourself. Just be as kind to yourself as you would to your best friend. Or what's been healing for me, and kind of what we touched on, is thinking about myself at 5 or 6 or whatever age. But what would I say to her? And I even get chills thinking about it, because yeah, that's a really good reframe too, is would I say this to myself at that age? Would I berate myself like that if I was standing in front of myself? And the answer, I hope, most of the time is no. And that, you know, just leaning into that at the end of the day, just know that you are your own expert, You are the expert of your life. Don't let other people speak negativity into your life. And if they do, replace it with something positive and true. And yeah, just stand firm in that and be an advocate for yourself.
Great. Well, yeah, thank you again, Shelley, for joining us. And we'll see you all in the next episode of It's Okay to Feel. Thanks again for being here. See you later.